Blog Talk Radio.
Do you watch Fox News all day? Are you dizzy from conservative spin? Are you a birther or teabagger? You might be suffering from a condition called barachnophobia. If so, the only cure is Liberal Dan Radio. Thursdays at 8 p.m. Central on Blog Talk Radio. Warning, Liberal Dan Radio is not a substitute for doctor's advice. Severe cases of barachnophobia may require psychiatric help. This may prove expensive if Republicans repeal health care. Listening to Liberal Dan Radio may cause you to embrace things like facts, logic, and reason. If these symptoms last for more than 4 hours, you have been cured. For more information, go to LiberalDan.com. And welcome back to Liberal Dan Radio, talk from the left, that's right. This is your host, Dan Zimmerman, coming from New Orleans, Louisiana. If you want to join in on the conversation, it's area code 347-838-8368. That's area code 347-838-8368. Or if you're on the show page currently, you can click the Skype button to join the show that way. You can also go and ask questions in the chat room if you don't feel like being vocal. And finally, if you're listening after the live broadcast, you can always go to the show thread at liberaldan.com and leave your comments, questions, concerns, conundrums, or other C words there. Today's show, we will, in a few minutes, be having a discussion about the legalization of marijuana and why it's why our drug policy when it comes to marijuana and other drugs perhaps is short-sighted and doesn't seem to be doing the job. But first, as always, I'd like to start each show with a snarky look at this week's headlines. As everyone knows, Seattle lost the Super Bowl on one of the dumbest plays in Super Bowl history. As it turns out, Pete Carroll was really horrible coach Rob Lowe, and he has cable. But it turns out that the interception was just a continuation of Deflategate, because it really took the air out of the stadium. Continuing the vaccination coverage, a doctor has taken a position of, if you do not vaccinate your kids, I will not treat your kids. If only more doctors took such a stance. In amazingly stupid news, Utah State Legislator Brian Green questioned if it is rape if the woman is asleep. I don't know, Mr. Green. Let's get a toy and try it on you while you sleep, and we'll see if you feel violated or not. A Texas legislator, I'm having problems with that word today, a Texas legislator has a request for Muslim visitors. They need to say the pledge and denounce terrorism. Apparently the fact that when they met in front of the Capitol and they sung the Star Spangled Banner, apparently that wasn't good enough for her. And that was this week's headlines. Now, briefly about this Muslim thing. There was a group of Muslims who were meeting in front of, I think it was the Texas State Capitol. And there was a counter-protest that was taken by a lot of Christians who seemed to have take issue with the fact that they were Muslims and they were there and something, and, you know, they don't want, you know, Sharia law to be imposed in the United States or whatever it is that they're afraid of. But, you know, and they don't think that these people are, quote, American. And that this legislator in Texas had both an American flag and an Israeli flag on her desk. Other than the fact that she was just being a troll and trying to, you know, piss people off even more because she thinks that flying an Israeli flag would do that, I can't imagine why an American legislator would want to hang a flag of Israel on her desk. It, you know, I'm Jewish. I've been to Israel. I think Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorism. It's fine. But the idea that an elected official in America would hang an Israeli flag equally with the American flag, no. That's not okay in my book. And they're just, these people are just being horrible. You know, and they seem to not follow the things like that they said the Lord's Prayer, ironically, and forgive those who trespass against us, you know, for, and have other, again, Jewish, I don't know the entire thing by heart, but there was the part about forgiveness about transgressions, yet they're willing to put the blame of any Muslim transgressions on all Muslims, and it just doesn't seem to be the very Christian thing to do. Maybe being Jewish, you know, looking at it from the outside, maybe I'm wrong. You know, you're more than welcome to tell me so. I'd be more than happy to hear a rational reason as to why these people were acting in a, quote, Christian way. It's just bad. That's just, you know, when I looked at those people who were sitting there and just having a peaceful protest and discussing what they should do, you know, in order to be peaceful, and then I had these angry, I'd rather go hang out with the Muslim guys. Honestly, I'd rather go hang out with them and chill with them, because they were handling themselves in a very nice, calm, rational, peaceful manner and not trying to, you know, disrupt everything. But hey, that's just me. Let me go ahead. I'm going to take the first commercial block real quick. Then we'll come back to the break. I'll briefly discuss the tweet of the week, and then we'll get to our special guest. Taking your calls as well. 347-838-8368. That's area code 347-838-8368. This is Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right.
Are you planning a trip to Disney soon? Do you want help avoiding spending mistakes and making the most of your vacation? Then check out Budgeteers.com, a new site devoted to helping you get the most mouse for your money. What kinds of tickets should you get? Is the dining plan a good deal for you? Should you stay on grounds or not? Should you buy park hoppers? Many other sites are filled with information about what other people like to do, but Budgeteers is geared to help you make the best decision for you. So check out Budgeteers.com or go to YouTube.com/Budgeteers and help make your trip the best it can be. Budgeteers.com is not a travel agency and it is not affiliated with the Disney Corporation or any of its holdings.
I am sick and tired of the propaganda in today's media. You know, we can't have a sane discussion about politics. Well, yes, you can, and it's on RLJS Radio Live with your girls, Monica RW, and Autumn S. I'm there every week when they discuss Michigan and national politics, job search, unemployment, and more from an independent left, sanity-based point of view. So, tune in. RLJS Radio Live, Saturdays and Sundays at 11 a.m. sharp here on the Blog Talk Radio Network.
And welcome back to Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right. This is your host, Dan Zimmerman from New Orleans, Louisiana. To join in on the conversation, it's area code 347-838-8368, or you can click Skype on the Skype button on the show page on Blog Talk Radio, or make your comments after the show at liberaldan.com. Now, briefly, I did want to mention, I think probably the most famous person who I have made the Tweeter of the Week is Hillary Clinton, and her tweet, I'm sure if you've heard it, there's been 38,000 retweets, so I'm pretty sure you've seen it or heard about it already, but the science is clear, the earth is round, the sky is blue, and hashtag vaccines work. Let's protect all our kids. Hashtag grandmothers know best. And yes, they do, and I couldn't have said it better myself. I harped on these vaccine anti-vaxxers last week. I may do it again next week more if there's more stuff that comes out, because it's becoming a really serious issue, and I won't be surprised if it actually becomes a campaign issue, at least a Republican Party primary campaign issue, because there are some theories out there. Let me tell you, there are some really interesting theories out there. Anyway, but I do want to go ahead and get to the topic of the show. Rayford Davis, he is a former police officer, a veteran of the City of North Charleston Police Department for 6 years, and he is now a member, or activist, whatever you want to say, or however he would like to call it, we'll get to him in a second, of LEAP, L-E-A-P, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And I asked him to be on the show after he offered to discuss it, and I've wanted to do this show for a while, and be more than happy to have him as an expert just share the knowledge with all of us. So without further ado, welcome, Rayford. Thank you for coming on the show and being a guest.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for the introduction. I was a police officer in the city of North Charleston, South Carolina, from 2002 to 2007. It was the eighth most dangerous city at the time. Before that, I got a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Charleston Southern. I was in the reserves with the United States Coast Guard and worked in social services. My entire career has been in drug-related. At North Charleston, our 300-man police force, our main mission was get guns and drugs off the street. I patrolled drug-plagued neighborhoods for 4 years. I was a detective for 2 years. I made hundreds of drug-related arrests. Many of these encounters were dangerous and violent. I assisted in drug warrant SWAT raids, street sweeps, drug-related murder investigations. After 6 years, my law enforcement career was cut short. Dan, I was hit by a pickup truck directing traffic at a car accident.
Wow.
And I traded my badge in for a permanent limp. So now I continue to serve my community as a member of LEAP. And you said it, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I know that kind of sounds counterintuitive, but I'm not just this one lone nut out here. There are thousands of police officers and law enforcement professionals throughout the United States and the world. Hey, we believe, just like alcohol prohibition, that the war on drugs has not only failed, but worse. It's become a self-perpetuating, constantly expanding policy disaster. It's the enforcement of drug prohibition laws that are responsible for so much of the crime and social destruction that we see, not the drugs themselves.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's something that actually had an interest in. You go to www.leap.cc, and there's a Why Legalize Drugs page on, and it's interesting, shows, you know, the comparison between arresting somebody for rape and arresting somebody for being a drug dealer. When you arrest a rapist, you know, there is one less person on the street, assuming he gets convicted. Conviction rates, you know, as they are for rape, probably not as high as they should be, but because it's very hard to, you know, get a conviction. But that being said, you lock one up, you lock a rapist up, that's one less rapist on the streets. But you lock a drug dealer up, there's still the same amount of drugs out there. It's just somebody else is going to be selling it.
You are correct. It is different, and that's part of what how aggressive enforcement. The harder you work, you actually create more demand. When you lock people up, what happens is that creates more incentive for other people to get involved. It's the risk reward and black markets that distorts the value of these drugs. You don't see guys on the street selling six packs of beer and wine coolers. You know, they're selling something that they can make a profit on, and that's
right.
Marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and other drugs.
Sure. And well, another interesting thing that you were talking about on your personal page on LEAP is the fact that when you would arrest somebody, that who would these drug dealers have actually distributing the drugs on the street? Was it the dealers themselves?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the first thing that comes to mind when you talk about legalization is, well, we can't legalize because we have to protect our children. And the way drugs are now illegal, drug dealers actually recruit kids to sell for them. I had kids. I patrolled one neighborhood. It was called Four Way. And, you know, it's your typical urban decay, you know, a lot of street activity, drug activity. And these were kids young as 10. And they were specifically recruited by the older dealers because, one, they worked cheap. And if they got caught, they just get a slap on the wrist. And plus, the drug dealers are out. You know, they're not the ones getting picked up. It's the kids. And that's who a lot of it was selling the drugs. So by the time they're 20, kids are 21, you know, they've already been to juvenile. They've already been to jail. They are thoroughly inculcated in the drug business. And by locking them up and giving them criminal records, I've actually locked them in to the drug trade and locked them out of normal society. So they're coming from difficult neighborhoods. Dan, you know, it's hard enough these days growing up middle class and with you know, lots of opportunity. When you grow up struggling economically, you grow up a child of a single parent, you grow up as a child of a parent that's been in jail, and then go to these schools, and you're in a big disadvantage.
Yeah, and if you have, let's say you're a kid, a 10-year-old kid, and let's say your dad, you know, happened to go to jail for a nonviolent offense, like a drug offense, that's probably going to make you more likely to go out there and sell drugs, just because of the fact that you now don't have a breadwinner in the family, and you're going to see, you know, you might see, oh, well, I can help my mom out this way, I can, you know, get myself, you know, all these things that we can't normally afford just by making this easy buck. For these dealers that are giving me, you know, I don't have to go, you know, I don't have to go find the drugs. They're giving them to me to sell, and all I have to do is, you know, give them back most of the money, and I keep some money for myself. And, you know, so it seems to me that, you know, by perpetually locking people up, you know, generations of people, you're perpetuating the fact that future generations are also going to make it be very hard for them to break out of that cycle.
That's right, Dan, and that's what I saw, and that's what you see particularly in the black community. You know, anybody, when I was a police officer, you know, we never tolerated any type of racism or racial bias. You know, our explanation would be, hey, we go where the crime is, and that's, you know, generally in minority neighborhoods. But we didn't understand the history of oppression. You have slavery, Jim Crow, and then drug laws. They were specifically targeting minorities back in the early 1900s. This is undeniable. So even if you're not racist or your department is not trying to discriminate racially, these laws were enacted. They had racial motivations behind them. And you have a generation of kids being incarcerated. And the greatest sociological predictor of someone going to prison is if they've had a parent that's been in prison.
Yeah, and that's one of the hardest things, the whole, you know, now I have a hard time explaining to some of my friends on Facebook and some other people when I'm not involved in myself with political discussions with them, is the fact that you don't necessarily have to be a racist yourself to be enforcing a racist policy. I mean, there's, you know, you can be thinking that you're doing the right thing, but not even thinking about the fact that, hey, this policy was enacted for a reason that it's not good. There is a structural and environmental racism that exists in this country, and part of that includes, you know, the, you know, enforcement of how drug laws are enforced. For a while, you know, was it, you know, crack cocaine was punished worse than coke, the regular cocaine, just because of the fact that it was, you know, it was looked different. And, you know, usually the crack was in the black neighborhoods and the coke was in the white neighborhoods. So you wound up, you know, locking black people up for a long amount of time for the same amount of drug.
That's correct. And if you look back at 1914 with the original Harrison Narcotics Act outlawing opium and heroin, the greatest users of opium was white women. They would use it called laudanum mixed with alcohol as a tonic. Of course, they didn't go after them. They went after Chinese that smoked it and corrupted corrupted women with it. And then they went after cocaine because black men down south would use it and go into rages. And you read articles from at that period, 1914, about police having to go up from a 32 caliber revolver to a 38 caliber revolver to stop these cocaine fueled madmen. And you look at that now and go, gosh, that's so ridiculous. Yet we use those same type of scare tactics today to continue the war on drugs.
And that's a real shame. And there are things that can be done, I guess, in because we're not talking about just completely Wild West, let everybody smoke, marijuana, let everybody do it. We're talking about like what we do with alcohol. We understand that it is a substance that you can get addicted to these substances that they give you altered brain chemistry, and they could impact your ability to drive, for example. And so basically what I'm assuming your association would be for is to treat it like alcohol. Make sure that the people who are taking it are adults. Make sure that it's well regulated so that it's safe. It's safer than what's being sold on the streets, and make sure that it's and that way you can control who is buying them by licensing the people who wind up distributing the substances.
You're correct, Dan. People are under the impression that you prohibit a substance that's like the ultimate level of regulation. And that's not the case. Prohibition is the abdication of all regulation. I'll tell you who's regulating drugs now. Chapo Guzman, down in Mexico, the head of the Sinaloa cartel that cuts people's heads off. You have these kids on that I dealt with on the street, 14-year-old kids and a gun in their pants. That's who's selling and regulating and determining the purity of a product. And they're not checking IDs. They'll sell the kids or anybody, they don't matter. And you can't even begin to control it until you legalize it, and then you can regulate it and bring it into the community to where it can be monitored. And you have to do it successful regulation and control. You have to realize that there is a recreational component to these drugs, and some people enjoy using them, and you have to understand that and allow for it.
Right, because honestly, somebody who's going to sit at home and watch cartoons and smoke some weed and eat some Doritos is probably not going to be a very big threat to anybody else in their safety and their livelihood. They're probably just going to sit there for a while and veg out until the high goes away. And I don't see any good reason as to why we should be busting down such a person's door and arresting them and locking them in prison for just sitting around and smoking something that makes them feel a little better than what a cigarette makes you feel, or a lot better.
That's
depending on how the quality.
That's correct. Look, I'm not a proponent of drug use. I think if you want to be happy and healthy, you should make an effort to avoid all drugs and medications, unless you really need them. Because you do have risk. But we have just totally blown out of proportion the risks that are actually involved with these drugs. And you can't make a proper decision on how to regulate them when you think that someone that just does, even just like heroin, this evil thing, that if you just take one hit, that you're going to turn into a Walking Dead crazed zombie. And that's just not the case. The addiction rates, I'll tell you for heroin, just so people can get an idea, there's between 400 and 600,000 current users of heroin in the United States, estimated. 4% of those could be considered currently addicted, and about 24% have ever been addicted to heroin at any time in their life. So, but 24% of users will go through an addiction, which is a little bit less than cigarettes. Alcohol would be about 10%. Marijuana is very low, and cocaine and other drugs, you have an addiction rate of between 10 and 20%.
Right. So, and one of the things, you know, one of the things that gets brought up, and I don't necessarily like, you know, the idea of including, you know, I think there's two different subjects here, as, you know, but I think it's an important subject to bring up, is that when you criminalize marijuana and you prevent its use, you also prevent doctors from being able to, you know, prescribe it to their patients, to be able to say, look, you know, you have, you know, glaucoma, you have, you know, some sort of disease that, you know, where you're not hungry and you have an upset stomach, and, you know, the marijuana products could help you. And, you know, some states allow it more than others, but, you know, the idea that, you know, if a doctor can tell me to take some OxyContin to make me feel better, why shouldn't a doctor be able to say, here, you take some marijuana, this is going to help you feel better too?
That's right. We just had the Surgeon General come out and say, hey, marijuana has some medical benefits. And see, that's in direct contradiction. Marijuana is considered a Schedule I drug in the Controlled Substance Act, which says it has no medical benefit and a high propensity for abuse. Marijuana is more restricted than cocaine and methamphetamine. So, you know, that fact of itself, you know, is incorrect, and that needs to be changed.
Yeah, because there's no, I can't see, you know, the idea of that marijuana is anywhere close to any of those other drugs. I mean, even if we're doing, because
any metrics, you know, alcohol, anything, it's so much less dangerous, and the reason is a gateway to other drugs. At any rate, is because it's illegal now. So
right.
When you have to buy marijuana, you have to go to somebody that sells it illegally, and they're likely to be selling other drugs as well. About 66% of illegal drug users in the United States use marijuana alone. So if we were to legalize marijuana, we would cut our illegal drug users in 2/3. Just an amazing reduction. And you have all these people going to jail, and arrest and incarceration is such a destructive element on its own, and very costly. And
yes.
Anything we can do to reduce that. I mean, here in the United States, is 5% of the world's population, and we have 25% of the world's prison population. In here, we're supposed to be, you know, the bastion of liberty, the shining city on the hill.
Right.
You know, that's just, that doesn't work.
Well, we'll talk about those prison numbers after the news block at the bottom of the hour. If you want to call in as well, we'll be taking your calls. It's 347-838-8368. That's area code 347-838-8368, or join us in the chat room and ask questions there as well. This is Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the largest national U.S. strike in 30 years enters its sixth day, United Steelworkers members will rally at Shell Oil's Houston headquarters Friday. 4,000 USW members at 9 oil refineries in Texas, California, Washington State, and Kentucky are on strike, mainly over staffing, safety, and health issues. Shell Oil made another labor contract offer that the USW is reviewing. USW Vice President Tom Conway says the strike over safety, staffing, and maintenance of oil refineries is the union standing up for workers and for safe operations in communities where these oil refineries are located.
We think this is important both to the workers inside the communities, but in our communities as well that are living in refinery areas. And this is an industry who does very, very well for itself. And in order to have a safe refinery in your community, you need people inside those gates who know what they're doing there and are sensitive to it because they live in those communities. And to ensure that when you're in there, you're working safely, you're qualified, you've been trained.
The United Teachers of Los Angeles are pushing for schools LA students deserve, a campaign to deliver the highest quality public education possible. Alex Caputo-Pearl, president of UTLA, says that main challenges include big class sizes, inadequate staffing, lagging compensation, and teacher recruiting concerns. Even as Los Angeles teachers mount this campaign, Caputo-Pearl says they face heavy anti-union and anti-public services attacks.
We're basically fighting for three things. One is around better learning conditions for students. Another is around increased voice for parents and community. And the third is around competitive salaries so that we can actually recruit and retain educators. Certainly LA, Los Angeles has been one of the ground zeros of that attack on teachers. It's part of a broader attack against public sector workers and part of a broader attack against large public systems that serve largely communities of color and largely low-income communities.
Caputo-Pearl says that the Los Angeles Teachers Union sees the value of solidarity with other unions on issues of common concern and is very active in the Los Angeles labor movement on issues like wages.
We're a merged local, so we do have NEA and AFT members, and we've put a very high priority on building bridges and coalitions within the labor movement. So one of the first things that we did was come out very strongly in support of SEIU Local 99's fight for a living wage.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by Ulico. For more than 85 years, Ulico has been protecting union workers with quality, affordable insurance while responsibly investing union funds to create jobs and achieve respectable returns. More information is available online at ulico.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to Liberal Dan Radio, Talk from the Left, that's right, discussing the legalization and eliminating the prohibition of drugs. Taking your calls as well, 347-838-8368, it's area code 347-838-8368. Join us in the chat room, join us via Skype, or if you're listening after the live broadcast, go to liberaldan.com to leave your comments and questions there. We also have, you know, I thank Untested Methods. They're the music that you mostly hear coming in and out of breaks, and I'm very appreciative of them to allow me to use their music free of charge. It's always a good thing to have such good music, enjoyable to listen to music for the show. Anyway, I'm going to bring back Rayford back on the phone, and we were talking a little bit before the break about incarceration. And basically the effect of all of these drug crimes is that you wind up filling jails with lots of nonviolent offenders who are doing nothing except, you know, for the most part, taking, you know, a little hit of weed, having personal personal possession, no intent to distribute. For example, I'm looking at a website, drugscience.org, looking at Louisiana stats. It's a little older, it's like during 2007, but marijuana possession arrests accounted for 91% of all marijuana arrests during 2007. Nationally, marijuana possession arrests account for 89% of all marijuana arrests. So the vast majority of these arrests are not people who are even intending to distribute. It's trying to, you know, kill, I guess, a centipede by cutting off feet one at a time instead of actually, you know, going for the head. This doesn't seem to be a very logical way to go about things, because, you know, these people are simply, you know, just using it recreationally and not, you know, necessarily causing great harm to the people, which is what, you know, government has a role to protect people from other individuals. But if you're just smoking a J on the, you know, at your house, you're not a harm, you're not a threat to me.
You're right, Dan, and you know, we can't even cut the head off of the centipede either. We're trying to do that in Mexico and other drug source countries, and you know, we're failing at that as well, and totally destabilizing governments. You look at Mexico, Afghanistan, Honduras, Colombia, all those countries where we have an active part in anti-drug activities, and we have zero, really nothing to show for it. We're not reducing the supply. When you try to push on the supply, you have what's called the balloon effect. And you can push on it in one part, but it's just going to squeeze to another area. People are going to use another drug. I'll give you a good example. Methamphetamine production. Done a good job of cutting back on shake-and-bake operations here in the United States, where people, you know, restricting Sudafed, cut it,
right,
and that type of thing. Cut it back about DEA's in the last 2 years, a 40% reduction in the amount of cooking operations. What happened was it just went to Mexico, and they produced it on industrial scale. Cost them about $65 a pound to produce methamphetamine in Mexico. Very high quality. That comes to about 14 cents a gram. And then it sells for $80 a gram. So
that's a pretty good profit.
That's a pretty good profit, isn't it? You know, you can take a lot of risk. Gold is what, $40 a gram?
Yeah.
So you can see the entire profit potential and how that it pays to use violence to keep control of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and then there's, you know, you have the benefits of you know, that, you know, you take all these actions and you're benefiting these drug cartels by, you know, pushing them out. You know, I'm not a big fan of the whole, you know, you can't buy more than one Sudafed deal, just because I don't like necessarily walking into a drugstore and being assumed that I'm going to, you know, start cooking some meth just because I have a cold.
It hasn't worked.
Right.
You see, it just like I said, it just pushes on the balloon. It comes out somewhere else, and then what you end up doing is locking up, or arresting, or interfering with the rights and liberties of honest citizens.
Yeah, and then you have this thing in 2006. Again, the data is a little dated, but I'm sure it's higher now. But the criminal justice system in Louisiana had $2.68 billion. In cost in 2006, includes state, county, and local costs. You know, corrections accounting for just under $1 billion of that. You know, and a lot of those are going to be individuals who are in there for drugs.
Of state prison inmates and jails, it's about 24% are in there for drug crimes. In federal prison, it's closer to 50%. We have 2.2 million people in the United States in jail right now. We make 12 million arrests. We have 7 million people under some type of correctional control. And much of that is drug-related. Prices, I hear in South Carolina, we're about $30,000 per person per year. In California, it's $47,000. The highest, Rikers Prison, New York, $96,232 per inmate per year. It's about $70 billion price tag each year for the war on drugs.
Just because someone wanted, you know, take some drugs for personal use. So, and then Louisiana, you know, Louisiana is made the news for being per capita the prison capital of the world. You know, Louisiana imprisons more people than, you know, some of the worst, you know, people that were labeled as part of the, quote, axis of evil, you know, China, other countries that you look up and, you know, you look at as police states. But Louisiana...
Soviet Union, 1950s, that was considered peak gulag. They had 823 per 100,000 people incarcerated. Louisiana today has 1,341 per 100,000. So you beat out Gulag, Soviet Union. 1974, East Germany only had 284 per 100,000. So you've got that one beat by, what, 4.5 times? It's just a total destruction of our society. And we'll get back to the racial aspect. I think it's, what, 38%? Of our people arrested for drug crimes are black. It's about 54% that are in prison for drug crimes are black. And they're, what, 14% of the population? Of course, it's a little more than that in Louisiana.
I don't have the drugs.
You see those, how that's focused on communities, and it absolutely destroys them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the drug specific on this page that I found, but in Louisiana, black people make up 33% of the population, but make up 76% of the prisoners. And a lot of this is because of drug crime. And yeah, obviously there are people that do murder, that rape, and people like that obviously should be in prison because we want to get those people, you know, off of the street. But there's, you know, we have mandatory minimums in Louisiana. We have, you know, three strikes you're out. You know, so you can get pulled over and have a joint in your car, and that could just send you to prison for life. And one of the things that, you know, that concerns me a lot when it comes to the prison system and why we have to keep feeding people into the prison system is because, you know, a lot of the times our prison, you know, there's been a push to privatize prisons. What do you think? Do you think that I'm right there? That there's a, you know, that part of the problem is if there's an incentive to lock people up. If you, you know, the people that are controlling these prisons are making campaign contributions to elected officials who are then perpetuating the laws that keep their prisons full and as such keep funneling them money. Do you think that that's, you know, contributes a lot, or at least in some but to you know, why we have and keep these laws, and why we we're so willing to just lock people up for even the smallest incident?
Well, you see those where private prisons have, you know, they get government agencies to contract to say, you know, we will have this many prisoners, or, you know, you'll have to pay a fine or something. It's, to think that we're privatized only make things worse. But we have so much of an incentive now. When you have lots of people that work as an employee for a prison and work to support it, you have entire communities that are supported. We have a correctional facility here in South Carolina, Lieber, that's out, you know, it's out in the country. I mean, that's the whole county is that prison. And so they, you know, hey, we want to keep it going.
Right.
And so that whole system, certainly it does perpetuate, and law enforcement does that as well too.
And, I found in one of the articles here, it's between 1994 and 2011, violent offenders in Louisiana only made up 17.3% of the prison admissions in Louisiana. 37% of prison admissions were for drug offenses. So more than double of the people, of the admissions to prison. Now, that could be multiple people, so it's not, you know, it's not doing it on a per-person basis, but a per-admission basis. But more than twice of the people going into prison are because of drugs, and that's just crazy.
You're right. I was listening to the sheriff from Plaquemines, Louisiana.
Plaquemines. Yeah.
And you know, he was saying, "Hey, well, you know, somebody just for drugs once, you know, they really don't spend any time in jail. We're talking repeat offenders." And he's right. When I was a cop, you'd look at people, and these guys would have rap sheets. You go, man, look at these guys. They're fourth, fifth time guys, and they hadn't spent hardly any time in jail. But you look at what their offenses are, and they're all drug offenses. So
right.
You think, I used to think these are really violent, bad dudes. No. You know, they're just, you know, they're into drug business. And like I said, when you first locked them up, you locked them into that business. And I'll speak to the violence as well. Having the drugs illegal creates a lot of this gang violence, all of these shootings that are between drug dealers is because it's illegal. They have no dispute resolution mechanism. I had never responded to a shooting between two pharmacists. I never responded to a shooting or any type of argument between local liquor distributors. Guys from Budweiser and Coors, they drive up their trucks to the same convenience store at the same time, load their same beer right on the shelves next to each other, never had a fight. Imagine that. You know, I think a bottle of Jack Daniels could kill you.
Right.
The same as a dose of any other drug. Yet somehow they're able to distribute it. If they have any disputes, convenience store doesn't pay them or something, they can come to the courts. When drugs are illegal, you cannot do that. You have to resort directly to violence. And
right.
That's what they and it creates more robberies. If you're trying to buy drugs and it's illegal and you wanna make a deal over some marijuana, you have to be surreptitious, you have to use cash. If I have some to sell, a guy can think, okay, if I rob him, who's he going to call? He ain't going to call the cops, so because that'll get him in trouble. So it makes people more incentive to rob each other, and so all of that violence, so much of that is just based. That's the blowback from prohibition. And there's another type of violence.
And because of prohibition, it's illegal. Which makes if people are selling it are going to want to earn a premium for the risk they're taking to sell it, which means your people are going to need more money to buy the goods, where if it was legal, you need less.
That's right. And there's another type of violence, and this is really what turned me and why I am now an advocate for these prohibition laws. And it's the violence that I used as a law enforcement officer and government uses against people. Every drug arrest I made, or, you know, when I would do a search warrant on a house, pull somebody out of a car and dig through their car looking for drugs or whatever, that is violence. And that's state-sponsored violence against people when they are involved in nonviolent, consensual activity. However, you know, unappealing of the substances they're dealing in, you are still using violence against them, and that's a unrecognized aspect of this, and it destroys our liberty.
Absolutely. All right, well, let me go ahead and we're going to take the last commercial break. Take any of your calls you want to call in as well. It's 347-838-8368. That's area code 347-838-8368. When we come back, we will finish up the topic with Rayford and see what else see what else we could have to say about this. This is Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left. That's right. If you need legal representation or advice on issues such as family law, bankruptcy law, DWI, or other civil or criminal matters, you need hands-on legal advice from someone who will treat you as a priority and not just another number. So call the law office of Sherry I. Sandler at 504-528-9500. That's 504-528-9500. Or email sandlerlaw@cox.net. I trust Sherry with my legal needs, so should you. The preceding ad was an unpaid client endorsement.
Do you like fun jewelry? Do you wish you could design jewelry that is designed just for you and that tells your story? Well, with Origami Owl, you can do just that. An Origami Owl jewelry bar is a fun way to get together with your friends, hang out, and design jewelry. There is no pressure to buy, but when you host a party, either in person or online, you have the opportunity to get deeply discounted jewelry based on what the friends you invite to the party purchase. If you would be interested in holding a party, either online or in person, go to cassiezcharms.origamiowl.com. That is cassiezcharms.origamiowl.com, and contact Cassie today.
Welcome back to Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right. This is your host, Dan Zimmerman from New Orleans, Louisiana. And the call in is 347-838-8368. You can ask questions in the chat room, or you can ask questions or make comments after the show on the show page at liberaldan.com. Now, we're talking about all of the badness that comes with our drug enforcement policy, how it, you know, perpetuates a cycle of crime and violence within families, within, you know, keeping generations of people in jail, how it's basically a perpetuation of racist policies meant to keep certain communities down, how it, you know, enriches the prison and prison complex, prison industry. It's basically enables, you know, violence of all forms, from people who are seeking dispute resolution because they can't go to the courts to find it, to violence on the part of police on those who they are required by the law to arrest, you know, because of the way that the laws are written and because of the laws have made these activities illegal. So I wanted to just briefly, I guess, switch gears a little bit. We now, for at least a little bit, have had, a public airing of what it might look like if we decriminalized marijuana, and that's the state of Colorado. Recently it was shown that the state of Colorado is doing so well with its tax base that they're contemplating the idea that they might have to send refunds back to its citizenry because of how well they are doing with the sales of goods. And I've watched some of the, you know, documentaries on what's going on in Colorado, and you still have the anti-drug people fighting it tooth and nail. I mean, it's just because it becomes decriminalized, just because you have now regulated, the people who, you know, advocate against, you know, legal drug use will also be advocating for much stricter, regulations, to the point where they're prohibitive and make it, you know, hard for them to actually, you know, compete with the products they want to sell. It's definitely interesting to see, you know, and then some of these people are people who you would normally hear against such regulations, but when it comes to drugs, they're all for it. Do you think that, Colorado, I think, is kind of like the model that it's kind of proving to us. I don't know if it's going to give enough people evidence to be foolproof, but I think it's helping to prove to others. Your state is not going to go to pot because it went to pot. You know, your state is not going to, you know, fall into ruin and be an anarchist den of debauchery and drug use and other horrifically horrible things with children, you know, shooting up in your back alleys because you've made this legal. You've worked to keep drugs, you know, making it legal, making it so that these people who are licensed to practice business in Colorado can, you know, are doing so, you know, under the law, or else they risk losing their license. And do you think that how Colorado has done it is the model that other states should take in this process in order to, decriminalize, marijuana and or other drugs, and make it so that we are not locking up people for use of these substances?
I think that's a very good start, and to watch them and see use and abuse rates among kids and see how that really hasn't changed But now they've still been very strict taxes and regulations, and you still have the federal government not
sure.
allowing banking and those type of things. So we have
taxation. I mean, the thing is, yeah, you have they basically have to do these cash only businesses, which makes it somewhat prohibitive, that. But it's at least it's better than nothing at the at least for these people who are basically be entrepreneurs and selling all sorts of different. Like there was one woman I saw on a thing where she's making treats that are high quality gluten free vegan marijuana treats, and she was being prevented from making one of her treats because these people insisted that in order to sell these goods that they should have a stamp on them that says this is a marijuana product, and it was impossible for her to make such a stamp on her product. She would have had to put something non-organic, non-gluten-free on her organic gluten-free products to make them qualified as law. So they're definitely trying to regulate these companies to death and trying to make it so that they are not going to be successful in this legal business. But it's just, what do you think? I mean, looking at, I'm sure you've looked at Colorado and what they've done. Do you think that there are things that they've done that specifically are right, or things that maybe Colorado still in their process has gotten wrong with it? Other than the fact that there's those regulatory things that are ridiculous.
Well, that looks to be kind of the model that other states are taking. I know here in South Carolina, we're working on a hemp, which is like an industrial hemp production allowances, and CBD oil for medical purposes, and marijuana for restricted to like seizures and terminally ill patients. But it's a start. And so you kind of work from there and get these state legislatures to just kind of slowly pry their hands. These folks, I imagine, are like people hanging onto a rope with their eyes shut, but they're only about an inch off the ground, and they're
right.
sitting there struggling, just so scared to let off the rope. You say, but you're trying to tell them, hey, just relax. Step down one little bit and you'll be on firm, solid ground. And it will be great. You'll see competition between the states to see how they do. Ones that regulate it more, I think, will have more problems and be less successful with marijuana. My idea of marijuana, it should be regulated somewhere between tomatoes and wine coolers. But now for other drugs, they have more issues and will require more regulation, but certainly that is a start, and we can see that successful. Portugal has done a decriminalization of pretty much all drugs, and they've had very good success, lowered crime rates, drug rates, lower overdose deaths, and have not seen an increase in things like drunk driving or addiction and abuse from drugs of children. So they've been a good example as well.
I think that's a very important point. A lot of people think, oh, if these people are going to OD, these people are going to get so high, they're going to be killing themselves with these drugs. And if that one country is that Portugal is an example that you can use, they're not going to start all of a sudden shooting up like crazy and it's just going nuts. They're just going to most people are going to use these very simply, and because it's regulated, it's cleaner and safer for people to use, so it's less dangerous for them to take these products. So,
Dan, if heroin was legalized tomorrow, would you shoot it up?
Probably not.
Yeah, why? It's dangerous, right? No, thanks. I'm not interested. Dan, I'll tell you about overdosing and everything. When I was a police officer, I responded to a local emergency clinic. A guy had overdosed on heroin. They had given him, Narcan that will reverse the effects of opium and basically revive you.
Mm.
Of course, by the time we got there, he left in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to investigate and figure out what was going on at the hotel where he was at, we get another call about a woman in distress in a bathroom at a Waffle House next door. We go by there, and there's a woman. She's had locked herself in the bathroom and had injected herself with heroin, the same batch that this guy had, and she died. Just a very distressing sight. Heroin is illegal, was illegal, but it didn't protect her.
Right.
You know, that is what killed her. She had a wife, you know, she had a family, she had kids. She did have a problem with heroin. You know, it didn't start off that way, but the drug being illegal did not help her.
Right.
Locking her up would not help her. She needs treatment and compassion.
Great. So anyway, so about the end of the show, so do you have any, you know, just any follow-up, you know, how they can get more information, how people can get more information about LEAP and help you guys spread your word?
That's right, LEAP.cc. Just want people to know prohibition does not work. It just like alcohol, it actually makes things worse and creates a much of the crime and violence that you see today. And so police, the tide is turning. There's more police officers today coming out and want to make the streets safer. You have to look at legalization and regulation. I'm on Twitter, Rayford D, and you can see me at leap.cc as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and I definitely hope we can do it again sometime.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
All right. Thank you. And that is the end of this week's episode of Liberal Dan Radio. Next week, we'll be back, same time, 8 p.m. Central, on Thursday, on blogtalkradio.com/liberaldan. You can follow me at Liberal Dan Radio on Twitter, facebook.com/liberaldan, youtube.com/liberaldanradio, as well as Liberal Dan Radio on Gmail, although I don't use that much. Until next week, this is Dan Zimmerman with Liberal Dan Radio. Talk from the left, that's right.